Batchable and Queueable are the two predominant async frameworks available to developers on the Salesforce platform. When working with records, you may find yourself wondering which one should you be using. In this post, we'll present an alternative solution that automatically chooses the correct option between the Batchable and Queueable Apex frameworks, leaving you free to focus on the logic you need to implement instead of which type of asynchronous execution is best. Let's walk through an approach that combines the best of both worlds. Both Batchable and Queueable are frequently used too. Perform API callouts, as callouts are not allowed within synchronous triggerable code or directly within scheduled jobs process data, which it wouldn't be possible to work with when synchronously calling code due to things like Salesforce limits. That being said, there are some interesting distinctions that you may already be familiar with, which create obvious pros and cons when using either of the two frameworks. Batchable Apex is slower to start up, slower to move between batchable chunks. Capable of querying up to 50 million records in its start method. Can only have 5 batch jobs actively working at any one given time. Can maintain a queue of batch jobs to start up when the 5 concurrent batch jobs are busy processing, but there can only ever be a max of 100 batch jobs in the flex queue. Queueable Apex is quick to execute and quick to implement. Still subject to the Apex query row limit of 50,000 records. Can have up to 50 queueable Apex jobs started from within a synchronous transaction. Can have only one queueable job being queued once you're already in an asynchronous transaction. These pros and cons represent a unique opportunity to abstract away how an asynchronous process is defined and to create something reusable, regardless of how many records you need to act on. Let's look at an example implementation, and then at exactly how that abstraction will work. First, an example of the design and usage. This example assumes that you're working with a B2C Salesforce org where it's important for the account name to always match that of the contact, and there can only ever be one contact per account. Notice how in our example contact async processor, the only logic that needs to exist is exactly associated with this business rule. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Of course, this is a very simple example. It doesn't show things like the contact.accounted being null, handling for middle names, and more. This example does show off how subclassing can help to simplify code. Here, you don't need to worry how many results are returned by the example query or whether or not you should be using a batchable or queueable implementation. You can simply focus on the business rules. What does that async processor parent class end up looking like? Let's take a look at what's going on behind the scenes. Creating a shared asynchronous processor. To start off, there are some interesting technical limitations that we need to be mindful of when looking to consolidate the batchable and queueable interfaces. A batch class must be an outer class. It's valid syntax to declare an inner class as batchable, but trying to execute an inner class through database.executeBatch will lead to an exception being thrown. This async exception will only surface in logs and won't be returned directly to the caller in a synchronous context, which can be very misleading since execution won't halt as you might expect with a traditional exception. A queueable class can be an inner class, but an outer class that implements database.batchable and database.stateful can also implement system.queueable. You want this framework to be flexible and to scale without having to make any changes to it. It should be capable of 1. Taking a query or a list of records. 2. Assessing how many records are part of the query or list. 3. Checking if you're below a certain threshold, which subclasses should be able to modify, start a queueable. Otherwise, start a batchable. This diagram shows what needs to happen synchronously versus asynchronously. Process mapping diagram outlining the basic framework. These limitations can help to inform the overall design of the shared abstraction. For instance, you should have a way to interact with this class before it starts processing records asynchronously. This is the perfect place for an interface. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Since the batchable class needs to be the outer class, you can first implement process there. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Don't worry too much about the query and records instance variables, they will come into play soon. The crucial parts to the above are: the async processor class is marked as abstract. The inner execute method is also abstract. The methods required for database.batchable have been defined. The kickoff method has been defined, which satisfies the process interface. By initializing a new subclass of data processor, and then calling the get method, you receive an instance of the data processor.process interface. Either by providing a string-based query, or by providing a list of records. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. The most important part in the above is this excerpt. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. The should batch Boolean drives out whether or not it's a batch or a queueable process that ends up starting up. Finally, the async processor queueable implementation. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. The queueable can also implement the system.finalizer interface, which allows you to consistently handle errors using only a platform event handler for the batch. Apex. Error. Event. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. In summary, the overall idea is that subclasses will extend the outer async processor class, which forces them to define the inner execute abstract method. They then can call kickoff to start up their process without having to worry about query limits or which async framework is going to be used by the underlying platform. All platform limits, like only being able to start one queueable per async transaction, are automatically handled for you. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. You no longer have to worry about how many records are retrieved by any given query. The process will be automatically batched for you if you would otherwise be in danger of exceeding the per transaction query row limit. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Subclasses can opt into implementing things like database.stateful and database.allows callouts when necessary for their own implementations. Since these are marker interfaces, and don't require a subclass to implement additional methods, it's better for only the subclasses that absolutely need this functionality to opt into that functionality instead of always having them be implemented on async processor itself. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Because, by default, subclasses only have to define their own inner execute implementation, you are freed up from all of the other ceremony that typically comes with creating standalone batchable and queueable classes. Logic that's specific to your implementation, such as keeping track of how many callouts have been performed if you're doing something like one callout per record, still needs to be put in place and tested. Here's a more complicated example showing how to recursively restart the process if you would go over the callout limit. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. As another marker interface example, here's what using database.stateful looks like. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Notice the complete lack of ceremony in both of these examples. Once you have all of the complicated bits in async processor, you get to focus purely on logic. This really helps keep your classes small and well organized. Unit testing the async processor. Here, we'll just show one test which proves that a subclass of async processor automatically batching when the configured limit for queuing has been exceeded. You'll be able to access all of the tests by visiting the repository for this project. Skipping code snippet for brevity. The omitted code provides an illustrative example. Conclusion. The async processor pattern lets us focus on implementing our async logic without having to directly specify exactly how the work is performed. More advanced users of this pattern may prefer to override information like the batch size, or allow for things like with slash without sharing query contexts. While there are many additional nuances that can be considered, this pattern is a great recipe that can also be used as is whenever you need to use asynchronous Apex. Check out the full source code to learn more. About the author. James Simone. James Simone is a lead member of technical staff at Salesforce, and he has been developing on the Salesforce platform since 2015. He's been blogging since late 2019 on the subject of Apex, Flow, LWC, and more in the joys of Apex. When not writing code, he enjoys rock climbing, sourdough bread baking, and running with his dog. He's previously blogged about the async processor pattern and the joys of Apex Post, batchable and queuable Apex.